Good morning, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay. I live in Chicago, Illinois, and I will be the host for the presentation this morning. Today is Sunday, March 8th, 2026. I'm going to give you the share ID numbers for Friday, March 6th, for the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting. That number is 23,264. That's 23264. And for the 10 a.m. meeting on Friday, that number is 23,265. That's 23265. This morning, A Vision for You presents Thoughts of Self to Thoughts of Others. We're going to hear our presenter is going to share her personal story of transformation as a result of the 12 steps. Alcoholics Anonymous, it was founded in the early 20th century as a response to challenges with alcoholism. And there's many folks that would tell you that for them, anyway, this was inspired by their creator, this program that God left an indelible imprint on this program of spiritual action. And if we, you know, if we look at the origins of the movement, as you know, it began with at least in AA with Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob Smith. They were two men who struggled with alcoholic addiction, and they met in 1935 in Akron, Ohio. And it was just one alcoholic sharing with another how to stay stopped by forming a relationship with power, a power greater than human power. And Bill was just trying to help himself. That was the whole thing that would become the very essence of our program, one alcoholic to another, one compulsive overeater to another. You know, and so imagine that, a revolutionary transformation on a spiritual plane of existence by way of taking really what are some simple actions. And as we know, in 1939, this text that we study, Alcoholics Anonymous, that we lovingly refer to as the Big Book, well, that was published, and the book has proven to be a blueprint, a roadmap, if you will, for outlining the 12 steps, how to work the steps. And there of course, there was tremendous growth, and there was expansion in AA because people were getting well. And in fact, this movement gained, you know, a lot of traction throughout the world over the years, and that, you know, and also with groups with related addictions like our own began to form. And the idea of OA, of course, came to our founder, Roseanne S. She attended a Gamblers Anonymous meeting with a friend in 1958. And so these Gamblers Anonymous members shared their stories, and she heard her story. She heard her story, not of gambling, but of compulsive overeating. And she knew then that perhaps, I wondered, would these 12 steps and 12 traditions, you know, help her to change and to transform her life. And today, how miraculous, you know, it is that we have, I don't know, some over 6,000, close to 7,000 OA groups that meet each week. We're in over 75 countries with some 60,000 members, probably more worldwide. And who knew that it would take, you know, a spiritual awakening to solve this problem? And you know, when one studies the past, as we do in this book, to be a link in the chain of a divine future. And I think it was first said in maybe around the 17th century, it said, if I have seen further, it is by standing on the shoulders of giants. So joining us this morning to share her journey in navigating through the 12 steps and undergoing a spiritual awakening is Lisa N. from Wisconsin. And Lisa is committed to the 12 steps and the 12 traditions as a way of life. And I know Lisa, and it's with sincere gratitude that we welcome Lisa N. to the line this morning. Hey, Lisa, good morning to you.
Good morning, Larry, and thank you so much. Love being here. I'm grateful to be here. And good morning to everyone on the line listening. I hope I can be helpful to you today. So, yes, I'm going to be talking about thoughts of self, the thoughts of others. But before I do, I'd like to just say a brief prayer and thank God for this time. So thank you, God. I am excited and grateful to share the experience, strength, and hope you've allowed me to have. And I ask that I help someone today. And I won't worry about the outcome. I'll let you take care of that. Help me to do what I can. Amen. So, yeah, I feel so grateful to be here because, and I will tell you a story about how I had an opportunity to be here about a year and a half ago, and because I wasn't working the program that day, or I wasn't in fit spiritual condition that day, there was a day that I lost my abstinence. I ate off my food plan, and something happened. I will tell you about that, but I'll give you a little background on me first. Yeah, I grew up in Wisconsin, actually, and I'm very happy here. It's always been home. And I grew up a compulsive eater. I was a baby wanting more bottles. My mother always said I always wanted a second bottle. My other siblings, my sister's older, and so was my brother. Neither one of them were eaters, and so my mother was grateful that I had a good appetite because that seemed like a good thing, a baby that would thrive. So anyway, I always had a problem with food. When I was a little girl, I went to a candy store or a corner store. We had corner stores back then. I'm 64, so this is a while ago. We had corner stores in the neighborhood, and people would sell things, and I went to the corner store and got candy on my own and charged it to my mother's account because she had charged her things from the corner store. I had seen her do that, so I thought that's just how you did it. And so I had a problem with food, and my siblings knew that I loved to eat, and so they would come home from school and they would bring me candy, and yeah, I had treats all the time. And I found that that gave me that ease and comfort and pleasure and happiness. And when there were festivals and things going on in our family parties, food was a very big part of it in our home. My mother loved to cook, and she got a lot of self-satisfaction out of people telling her what a great cook she was. And I kind of ended up doing that myself. And so now I'm still cooking for people. I don't know if you have that experience too, but we had a party last night and I'm cooking for people. I'm not eating it, but what we serve, but not all of it. But yeah, it's just part of my life. So I find food prep, food for others, preparation for others, cooking, shopping, a big part of my life. Well, anyway, so as I grew older in school, I became overweight, and it worried my mother. My mother did not like it that I was overweight because I think, honestly, and I'm not judging her, I think this is because I've experienced this as a parent. You worry. You think people are saying, what is she doing as a mother that this child looks this way? And it bothered her. So she went to a pain and weigh, and I was in elementary school. And actually, I was pretty close to middle school. She went to a pain and weigh and got a program so that she could bring it home to me because I wasn't allowed to be in that program. I was too young. And that was kind of a stunning, right? I mean, I think young people need different nutrition than adults. And so I was eating very small lunches in my mind compared to what I eat today. I don't think I had enough nutrition. I didn't follow. I wasn't able to focus in school because I was either all sugared up in the morning from cereal or whatever I put on my cereal. And I was always thinking of self. How do I look compared to others? I'm not as smart as others. They're not nice to me. It's me. It was me, me, me from the beginning. And that was a sad life. And I will tell you, in the big book, it says on page 21, this is who I was, okay? Dangerously antisocial, in a fog from, well, for me, overeating. Incredibly dishonest and selfish. I had special gifts and talents, some that I shared, some that I wasted. But there was an obsession that I had with my looks and hoping to be noticed by others. And it took over my life. It took over my thinking. And it made me unhappy. And it also says in the book on page 48, I was faced with destruction, alcoholic destruction in the big book, but for me, overeating destruction. And what I had to be is I had to be open to spiritual matters. And it was interesting because I really was. I liked church. I believed in a higher power. And it was not, that wasn't the problem. The problem was, who was my higher power? And I didn't know my higher power. I just believed in one. But that was a good start, right? So I think that what I thought is that my parents or other people were higher powers, especially my mother, because my mother was, she's an angry person. She came from abuse. And I think that I felt like anybody who kind of lorded over me was a higher power. And it was unfortunate because I feel like everybody in our whole family thought she was God. And anything she said and did, we should follow and we should do. And if we didn't, it was very unpleasant for us. So enough about that. As I went to high school, I wasn't really that heavy. I've seen pictures of myself, and I'm like, why did I think I was fat? But I had such a low self-esteem. That was my major problem. And like I said, I spent a lot of time looking at others, comparing myself. I had gifts and talents, but I didn't see them. And I was obsessed with my looks and my weight. And so I was an active person. I loved to dance, and I loved to ride my bike, and I loved to swim. So I think that I did more of that in high school than I did when I was younger. And so that could kind of keep my weight down. And that helped me, not be obese, which I did get to be. And when I went to college, my father died that year. I was 18, almost 19. And that was a lot of turmoil in our family. My mother and father did not have a good marriage. There was a lot of unhappiness in our home and dysfunction. And my father also had a compulsion to overeat. He was a smoker. He also was dangerously antisocial. And I can see him at the dinner table in a fog while he was eating, staring out the window, beautiful blue eyes. I was looking at him, watching his face. And my brother was making fun of him because he was shaking his leg while he was eating. Why do we make fun of somebody like that? Somebody that we really actually loved, but because my parents didn't get along, weren't quite allowed to love the way we should have been able to. So anyway, that was a very sad time in our family. And I wasn't overweight at that time. But then I went to another college. I went to nursing school. Didn't do well there. Had to go to another school where I got accepted. But then it was stressful. Oh, boy. School was stressful. Nursing school, hard. And And so what I did is I ate. I ate in school. They had food galore. They had whatever I wanted. And I started gaining weight. And I did that. You know, that was a childhood thing. It was something way back in the childhood. And so I feel like that stress that I had in childhood, I was like, here it is again. I've got that food. I can depend on that. Went to church, even when I was in college, but I didn't understand that my higher power could help me with this food problem. However, I don't know if you're like me, but did I really know that I had a problem with food? Yes and no. I knew others weren't eating the way I was eating. But I didn't think I had an addiction. We didn't really talk about addiction back then. I think that was something that I heard later, probably maybe in college, but I don't know. Oh, I know where I heard it the first time somebody said to me. They said that they went to Overeaters Anonymous. It was a girlfriend of my brother's. She said how much she enjoyed it, and I thought she was crazy. Thought she was really goofy, and she was overweight. And the one thing I have learned since I have been in this program is that if I'm going to help people, which I always thought I wanted to help people, I didn't know if I wanted to be a nurse. My mother wanted me to be a nurse. But I wanted to help people in some way. And I have found in this program that if you want to help people, you have to put the food down. You have to work the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous with a sponsor. You have to do it kind of. You got to move along. Can't dawdle. And then you've got to turn around and help others. And that truly is my experience. So anyway, after college, met my husband, gained a lot of weight after I got married. I think that what I felt was finally, okay, I can relax now. I can be myself. But I must have been disturbed by things. I must have. And he was gone a lot. He was in school when we got married, and there was stress, and I was alone again. I was dangerously antisocial again. In college, you can't really be, you have more opportunities to be with people. Working as a nurse, you have to be with people. And so I could be dangerously antisocial afterward. So I gained a lot of weight after I got married. And then once I got pregnant, I gained 80 pounds with my first baby, 65 pounds with my second baby, and I couldn't take the weight off. After the first baby took it off, second baby could not take it off. And then I gained an additional 60 pounds with my third baby. And, you know, after that, it was just too hard. I had done pain and ways. I had done all the different diets. You know them all. I don't have to say them. I did a lot of those to lose weight. And this time it wasn't working. And I was miserable. I was unhappy. I felt people were always looking at me, judging me. I remember one time somebody saying to me, oh, so-and-so said they saw you at the mall the other day and you were eating an ice cream cone. It's like, okay, so if I saw somebody, I don't know that I would mention that I saw them eating something, but maybe, I don't know. Anyway, my weight was always in the lower part of my body. And it was a part that I always felt when I walked away, people were looking from behind at me. And it was so humiliating. I really, it was the way my body was made. You know, I'm kind of a pear shape, I guess. And but that was the part that always, whenever I gained weight, people kind of joked at me. They even gave me a crack on my fanny sometimes when I'd walk by. Remember that happening at work once, being like, oh my gosh, people just they think they can make fun of that part of me. Anyway, so maybe you've had that experience too. I don't know. So I have to tell you, the other day I went into that's my story of getting to that weight, okay, that terrible weight. I didn't do anything about OA until my kids were like in grade school, middle school, high school. And actually, I think they were all a little older. I was about 45 when I first came to the rooms of OA. It was a time when my husband was very kind to me, never was unkind to me about my weight. But one time he said to me, we were going to go to his class reunion, and he said, are you going to do anything about your weight before we go? And I felt really bad. I knew he didn't deserve a wife that looked like me. I was 230 pounds. And so I knew I had to do something again. And I heard on a radio station that if you are having a problem with food, come to Overeaters Anonymous and we can help you and we'll love you until you can love yourself. I can't remember what the words were exactly. But I remember thinking, okay, is that a message from my higher power? I don't know. I didn't know. So the next week I heard it again on the radio and I thought, yeah, that's a message. And I at that time I was reading spiritual books, but there are different spiritual books than I'm reading now. There's a lot of different ideas, and some of them were the ideas that came from the AA Big Book, but I'm different now than that, and I love how the Big Book of AA and all of you and my sponsors and all the people that have helped me in this program have brought me to my higher power as I know him today. And you know, it kept going up. I kept wanting more, and I wanted more and I got more. So don't give up if you're just at the beginning. Keep wanting, keep asking. So the other day, I was getting a cup of tea, and I had a cup that I had bought when I first started going to OA. And it was the promises. And the promises say, by the way, they're on page 83 and 84 in the Big Book, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace no matter how far down the scale, what a funny word for us, right? Scale we have gone. We will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness, self-pity, disappear. We will lose interest in selfishness and gain interest in our fellows. What a concept. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook on life will change. Fear of people, which I think was at the heart of my problems, part with some of them, and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us, like being with people. That's why I was isolating all the time. I didn't know how to be with people. I didn't know how to be a friend of people. I didn't know, I didn't understand them. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. We are being fulfilled. They are being fulfilled among us sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, they will always materialize. Here it goes, if we work for them. And that is what I didn't want to do when I first got to OA. I got there because of that. I knew I had to go because of those messages I was hearing on the radio. But when I got there, I didn't want to work. I told them what I did. I knew I belonged. I listened to others sometimes because I was kind of a person that I was always in my own thoughts. But I really didn't want to do the work. I'm sorry, I've got an alarm going off in my ears. Hang on. So anyway, I didn't want to do what others told me. And I thought that because I had read these other spiritual books and done some studying, that I knew God and I knew all about, you know, spirituality. So when I'd hear them talk and they weren't, they didn't appear recovered because they might have had excess weight on their bodies, I was like, what are you talking about? Why are, you know, you're saying that this is a great program, this and this and this, but, you know, I'm there to get thin, and you're still heavy, and I don't get that. So, anyway, yeah, I needed to work the program, and I didn't know that I needed to work the program until I got the gift of desperation. I was there for 2 years. I kind of went, I kind of didn't go, and then I got this gift, and all of a sudden I was like, you know what, I think if I don't find somebody to help me, and I had a couple of people who sponsored me. One poor person, I sometimes showed up, I was always late for our meetings, she just got frustrated with me, and I was like, you know what, I don't think we're supposed to do this, so we, you know, broke up. You're not really supposed to look at it that way. But anyway, I went to the next person. I did not get her what she was telling me to do. And she was really nice. And she had lost a lot of weight. So I thought she was going to help me. But no, that she wasn't the person either. You know why she wasn't the person? Because I wasn't doing what I was supposed to do, which was to get this relationship with a higher power. That's what the books tells us, the big book tells us. That is our main purpose, is to get this relationship with a higher power. And so finally, with this gift of desperation, I said, okay, tell me what to do. And I was led to a person who did say OA had changed their life. And I worked with her. I actually made it to our appointments. I wasn't always exactly on time. I have a little problem with that today. But I'm getting better. I must say this program has changed me in many ways, and so have other programs. I'm in a few. And so she told me to check in with her every morning and to be accountable. No trigger foods. I had to put the food down. And I did that and called her every morning for 30 days. We did a pamphlet together. We didn't work through the big book. In fact, I remember there was one of the questions came out of the big book. And I said to her, I don't have that book. And she said, don't worry about it. And she said, that's okay. So, and it was, because after 30 days, I was not thinking about food like I always did. Constant thoughts of food. I don't know if I need to tell you what I did with food, but I would eat until I was absolutely stuffed, and it never helped to eat all that food. I remember buying food that was special for holidays, eating it while nobody was looking, and then having to buy another one. I probably did all the same things, maybe some of the same things you did. But anyway, I realized after 30 days with speaking with the sponsor that things were different. I wasn't thinking about food. I was focusing on what she had told me. And that was something I had never really done, never focused. Okay, I'm supposed to eat this now, okay? Right? I'm supposed to eat that, but I can't have that. Really focusing. And I was praying, and I always prayed. I had prayed always throughout my life. Even as a child, I liked praying. So that came easy to me. But reading and doing an assignment, writing a question every day, that took energy and effort. And when it came to the 30 days, I told her what had happened. And she said, well, you know, she explained to me that I had done, I can't, first step. God can, second step. I had given this over to God, and he was helping me. And then third step, I let him do it. And so she took me, she let me do a fourth step, which I was a mess during. I was terrified, but I did it. And I did it fairly thoroughly and quickly. And I gave her my fifth step. And I sat bawling at the end. And I mean, I was just such a relief. It was such a relief. And I didn't have that hour that you're supposed to after I gave her the fifth step, because we were at the meeting. And so everybody was coming in, and I think they were even listening to it. I don't remember. But yeah, it was pretty profound. I made my amends. I found out what my defects of character were, and I made my amends to some people, and they weren't the kind of amends that I make today. I make them according to the big book. I made the amends the best of my ability back then, and that people were very kind to me. Then when I came to the part where I didn't do a nightly review, but I did talk to somebody every night, and I could, at times, I could share things. So it was fortunate that I had that person. I still talk to her several times a week. And she's much older than me. I'm grateful for her. She's really been a help to me all these years. And, I've had wonderful sponsors. Oh my goodness, such wonderful sponsors helping me. So I learned when I started to sponsor people that I didn't know how to do it, but God would help me. And I did, but I wasn't doing it so that people were getting well. They weren't getting better. And I didn't know what I was doing wrong. So I didn't have a sponsor. My sponsor left the program, my original sponsor that I worked with, she left the program. So I was like trying to find people to help me, but nobody could. Nobody was available. I wasn't on the phone then. This was all in person. And it was hard. And then somebody at a meeting came up to me, an older lady. She's deceased now. I'm going to use her name, Dolores, because I want her name up in the ethers. I want her to hear her name. And she came up to me and she said, do you need a sponsor? And I said, yes, I do need a sponsor. She took me through the steps again, and all of that made a huge difference because she did it through the big book. She is the one who told me about Vision for You. And I started doing that every day, and that this is huge for me. Big, big change. And then she passed away, sadly, but left me with so much, so much. Oh, my goodness. Then I got another sponsor, and she was not from our country, but, again, changed my life. Took me through the steps because I was floundering after my sponsor died, and I didn't realize I was overeating vegetables, and I didn't work with a nutritionist. I just made my own food plan because, you know, I know what I can eat. I know how much I can eat, right? No, I didn't. I needed somebody, a professional, to tell me, and so I got one, and that made a huge difference too. And I lied to my spot that sponsor too. I told her I was, I. She said, you know, get a nutritionist or use the OA pamphlets. And I said, okay. And I didn't like the pamphlets, and I didn't want to spend money on a nutritionist. So I just kept doing what I kept doing while she was taking me through the steps. And I said, you know what? I'm still eating a lot of vegetables and drinking broth. And she said, well, what did your nutritionist say? Or what is your food plan say? I'm like, oh, yeah, I didn't do that. So you see, I can be a liar. I can be all kinds of things. And this is many years ago. And she said, well, I can take you through the steps again quickly with a nutritionist or a pamphlet, but if you don't do those things, I can't work with you. And I was like, oh, wow, that freaked me out. So there I go. I better do what I'm told. And, you know, like it says, OA isn't for people who need it, who want it. It's for people who do it. And I needed to do it. So I did it. And now I'm weighing and measuring my food happily. I'm grateful to do that. And at night when I do my nightly review and my gratitudes, I thank God that I weigh and measure my food. And I never thought I would. So getting back to helping people. I finally could help people. Now that I had gone through the steps this way, I was able to. I had a system. I had the way my sponsor showed me how to do it. I could help people, and they were getting recovered. You know what? There is nothing like that. To watch people, I mean, it's amazing to go through it yourself and lose. I lost 80 pounds. I've maintained that. But to see people not only lose weight, but have relationships change. That's the best part. Your relationships change. You're a happier person with other people. And you understand people, because so many times what people have done to me is what I did. You know, I didn't even realize who I was. But it is wonderful to watch people change and grow and be happier, and say they see the changes and they have a better relationship with their higher power. And it's just, this big book is amazing. And so I want to tell you, I got to look at the time here, how much time I have. I have to tell you a story, okay? So a year and a half ago, I don't know if I started telling you this or not, a year and a half ago, I was going to do a Vision for You special edition. And what happened is I didn't do a 10th step. I got myself in trouble, and I ate off my food plan, and I couldn't do, in good conscience, I couldn't do the talk, which was the following week. I had to cancel. And so if that happens to you, it's not the end of the world, because God used this. So here's what happened. I was self-centered. And it says in the big book, self-centeredness is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation. But we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. And that is what I did. I wasn't thinking about others. I was thinking about myself. So what happened is my husband had an uncle, and he was an uncle that was beloved. And I was jealous. And I've always been kind of a jealous person. That's one of my character defects. I have to pay attention to that. I always want the most. I always want the best. When other people get the most or the best or seem to, I get jealous. I feel insecure, whatever. So my husband loved to hunt with his uncle and had a very close relationship. Spent a lot of time with him up north. And you know what? Not today. I want people to be happy. I don't want people, just me, to be happy. I want others to be happy. But back then, I didn't. And I did it. I did a fourth step. I've done 10 steps. Every time I went up there, I was miserable because, you know, I wasn't getting all the attention. This man, he was, a lot of people liked him. He was very nice. But I was jealous. So went up there a year and a half ago, and he was kind of a character too. I mean, he's a nice man, but he's a character. He loves to eat. So I would always invite them for food, him and his wife. And one night he was invited for dinner and with his wife, and my husband noticed that something had been destroyed, broken, and the uncle had used it and didn't tell him. And it was so upsetting to my husband. And I kind of liked that. I kind of liked it because now this man wasn't the favorite for that moment, for that day. And my husband was very upset and was waiting for the uncle to say something. He didn't say anything that whole day. And then they came for dinner that night. And he didn't say anything. And I was getting so amped up. I was just as amped up as my husband. And I was not doing a 10th step. It was unfortunate. I didn't. And then I had all my food ready there. Brought it with me. Had it weighed and measured except the vegetable and the oil. And I did that for everyone. And I ate it with everyone. And then my husband said to him, you know, I noticed this broken. What happened? And the uncle came clean and told him. And then after I ate dinner and I realized what I had done and how I hadn't weighed and measured vegetables or fat, I realized how foolish that was. And what had happened was I was so involved in the emotion and the turmoil that I hadn't taken care of my spirituality, my relationship with God. And God doesn't want me to be angry and upset with people. He wants me to be at peace. And so I had to cancel the talk. But I knew, and I said to God, you're going to use this. And what I want to tell you about that is that, you know what usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well, does it? That's what it says in the big book. I begin to think that life doesn't treat me right and that I had to exert myself more. And I had to be, I wanted to be gracious, but inside I was seething and I wanted to be angry and I wanted to be the favorite. And I was just all this weird self-pity, anger, blame. And it wasn't about people. It wasn't, you know. So anyway, what happened? His uncle soon after was diagnosed with cancer. And, you know, now we're feeling terrible, of course. And I'm back on my food plan. And I was the next day, thank God. And I ended up really trying to help him. I went to the hospital appointment with him. He was out of town, and so I went, I did that. I stayed with him. He stayed overnight. I brought food up there. I sent food up there. I prayed with them. It became a whole different relationship because of my higher power. And I didn't worry about how he was the favorite uncle anymore. My husband was going to be grieving, and he did pass in November. Before that, we said we loved each other. There was a very good, it was a good thing the way it ended for me. And it was for him too, because he probably knew I didn't like him. You know, people know that. They can tell, right? And so I believe God used this. And I'm so grateful for it. And so I was too, there were, I don't know if there were other things I was going to say, but I think I think I'm supposed to wrap up. Larry, do you know where I am with time?
Yeah, you're getting towards the end there, but you're good. You're good, Lisa.
Okay.
So you can take your time
All
to
right.
wrap up.
All right, thank you so much. So what I want to say is, why would I have wanted to go back to the food and isolation that way when I didn't weigh and measure my food that night and get all angry, not do a 10th step? Why would I have done that? And the only thing I can tell you is that I have a disease. I have this compulsion. And it starts in my thinking, and then it comes out various ways. And I feel like my disease wanted me to have a problem. My disease wanted me not to share my experience, strength, and hope with all of you a year and a half ago. But my higher power said, no, I'm going to use this. And I'm going to tell people, I'm going to let Lisa tell people the story, because, you know, things happen. We're not going to be perfect. We don't have to be perfect. We just have to keep working our program and trying to stay in the best spiritual condition, best out in the fit spiritual condition that we can, right? And so my pride took over. I was spiritually immature that day, and I don't have to do that anymore. I can grab hold of those promises that I read, and I can be grateful to help other people. And I just like my life a whole lot better. And I'm so grateful to be here. I want to read to you the St. Francis prayer, and then I will wrap up. It's a beautiful prayer. You can find it on page 99 if you're not familiar where that is in the big book. So, Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love. That where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness. That where there is discord, I may bring harmony. That where there is error, I may bring truth. That where there is doubt, I may bring faith. That where there is despair, I may bring hope. That where there are shadows, I may bring light. That where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgiving that one finds. It is by forgiving that one is forgiven. And it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen. Guess that's all I've got, Larry.
What a lovely job. Thank you so much, Lisa. You know, you started with the prayer, you ended with the prayer. That's a great demonstration of recovery. And I'll say, too, that we're, I'll give you the share ID in a moment, but one thing, too, is you know, I started off and mentioned that, you know, we build this on the shoulders of giants, and you mentioned one of them. I usually don't talk so much about people, but you mentioned Dolores, and she was one of the true giants in recovery for me. There's a few others, but she was one of them for sure. But in any case, I'm going to give the, amen, right? She was lovely. The share ID for the presentation this morning is 23,267. That's 23,267. We're going to now transition to a Q&A portion of this morning. But before we do, also just to let you know, please stick around to the end of the recorded portion, and then we'll ask Lisa N. for her contact information. So with that said, if you have a question for Lisa, questions only, please press *1 to unmute your phone and give me your name, and we'll set up for some questions for Lisa. Who has a question? Star one.
Toby K.
Hi, Toby. Gotcha. Who else? Great time to pose questions.
Lisa C.
Hi, Lisa. Anybody else? Great opportunity. What was the question? Got Toby
Nancy
and Lisa.
Nancy M.
I got Nancy. And was that Chrissy? Did I hear Chrissy?
Jessica C.
Oh, Jessica. Hi, Jessica.
Nancy.
Anybody
M.
else? And then another Nancy.
No, same Nancy.
Oh, same Nancy. Okay. So I got Toby, Lisa, Nancy, and Jessica. All right, let's start with that, and then we'll see if there'll be plenty of time if you have a question. You're prompted to ask a question. So let's start with Toby. Toby, good morning to you. What question do you have for Lisa?
Yeah, hi, good morning. Thank you, Lisa, for your talk. I really appreciated it, and I identified with a lot of it. So I'm working with a sponsor now, but we're not doing the steps. We're doing the smooth. We're just talking and, you know, how is my day and blah, 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 and the food. And she's such a lovely person, and I love being with her, but I'm not getting anywhere. So, and I love that she's in my religion. It's very comforting to me and helpful, but we're not doing the steps. So I don't know how to say, you know, I can't do this anymore with you. Even though I enjoy being with you, but I'm not getting anywhere. So,
let's see if we can.
Thank you. Thank you.
So it seems, I see definitely see a question in there, and it's a great one. If this makes sense, Toby's wondering, what if you're working with someone, Lisa, and they're not moving forward with the work? What's if that makes sense? If you could speak to that.
Yes, I can. Sure, Toby, thank you for your question. You know, it's a really good one because I don't think that it doesn't happen to others. I think it does happen to others, so thank you. I feel in my heart that you don't have to end that relationship if you enjoy talking to that person, but I think you have to find somebody else to work the steps with. And so if you can, I don't know how often you're talking to her. If you're talking to her every day, are you talking to her every day? Toby? Well, here's what I was going to say. If you're talking to her every day, that is time that you could spend talking to somebody about the steps. Now, I'm just saying, you can keep that relationship with that person if she's lovely and you enjoy talking to her, but definitely find somebody that'll take you through the steps. And you know, there's a great opportunity right after the first 7 a.m. vision meeting that they have people that are willing to sponsor, and you can get numbers off of that meeting. I believe for me, it would be 7 a.m. Central Time. It's the 8 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. And they also do that with the 10 o'clock Eastern meeting too. After the vision meeting, they have people that give their names and numbers, and they are open for sponsorship. So yeah, definitely don't delay, because you need to do the steps. You know, like I said, you got to put down the food and you got to work the steps, and then you got to turn around and help others, and that'll keep you sane, and it'll help other people and make you a happier person. I hope that helped.
Thanks for the question, Toby. Okay, next up, we have Lisa followed by Nancy. Lisa, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning. This is Lisa C. from New Jersey. Lisa, thank you so much. I will always feel a special connection with you, and this was just such a wonderful experience to listen to you. I loved how you kind of drew a line between the missed opportunity to do the 10th step and then the outcome of that. And so I just wanted to know a little bit more about your 10th step practices and anything that you can share about that, and like how you consistently do it even when it's hard. I would just love to hear anything about it. Thank you so much.
Sure, you're so welcome. And thank you, Lisa, because we do have a special story together, don't we? I don't know if, you know, sometimes I don't know if I can tell it or not, but you were very kind to me, and I got to meet you. So I'm thrilled about that. But anyway, getting back to the 10th step question. So what I do is, and I've had a metamorphosis with my 10 steps. First, my first sponsor, the one who had me go through the pamphlet, and I didn't need the big book, she said, God bless her. I mean, you know, it's just where she was at, what she could give me, right? She can only give me what she has. And she told me for a 10th step to say, God bless them, whoever was disturbing me, and change me. That was my 10th step. Now what I do, it's a lot different. I can either talk to people, or I will often text, depending on where I am. If I'm in the car with my family and I have a disturbance, I text it to a sponsor. And it's whatever's disturbing me. So is it a fear? Is it a, and you know, like we have resentments and we do a 10 step surrounding resentment, or we say, I've got to do a fear inventory. Well, my sponsor believes that every fear, there's a resentment in there too. So I have to do a complete resentment. I don't just do a fear inventory. Like, I don't just call somebody and say, I have a fear. Can I do a fear inventory with you? No, I have to do the whole thing. So that's how I do it. I go through, I say a prayer. I learned it from the 10 step train, which if you haven't done a 10 step train, you don't have to, but I learned how to do a 10th step from the 10th step train, and it was unbelievable helpful. I learned the prayers, and it's just such a great experience for me. So so I say a prayer in the beginning. I do I talk about the resentment I have, what's affecting me, you know, where my defects are, and I have a long list of sheet, actually, that tells me where I'm selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and fearful. And I go through that sheet. And, you know, a lot of them, quite honestly, a lot of those character defects are still the same ones that I have. But I do ask God to remove them. And I pray again. And I say the seven-step prayer and ask for, you know, for feedback. So, yeah, it's a thing. And I try to do that when I'm feeling any disturbance at all. And, in fact, I heard somebody once say, if you roll your eyes, you need to do a 10th step. And I'm sure other people have heard that one, too. I think it's kind of a funny one, but I hope that helps. And, you know, you can always call me.
Thanks, Lisa. Okay, next up we have Nancy. Nancy, good morning. Nancy, press star one.
Hello, it's Nancy. I'm from Pennsylvania. Lisa, I really could use your help. So I guess my question is, are you going to give out your number? I feel like I'm floundering. I've been in program a long time. I feel like I've never done it through the big book. Like, I always say, oh, OA, OA, OA literature, OA this, OA that, OA, you know, prayers, OA, all that. And I just feel like I'm just like lost a little bit at this point. And I have never felt like this in program. So are you giving out your number? Or I know it was mentioned the 10 a.m. Eastern meeting, which I've tried to get on. I've read the podcast, listened to the podcast.
Yeah, but
my question
well.
Is,
Mm-hmm.
My question is, how do I get numbers to speak with people that are like-minded? They can help me through the big book.
Nancy, thank you so much for your question. And you know what? I'm sorry that you're floundering right now, but I want to
thank
tell you,
you
something. Yeah, I want to tell you something. This is not a bad thing. This is a really good place that you are at, because now you know, hey, I got to have help, and that is a great place to be. So don't dismiss this time or feel like it's bad or wrong. It's actually a really good thing. And yes, you can get those numbers at two different meetings, and people will be delighted to call you, or you can take down their numbers and call them. So I will be giving my number at the end of this, and feel free to call me. I'd be happy to talk to you. So the meeting again, there's two Vision for You meetings. I don't know, you're Pennsylvania, so you're Eastern time. And there's one meeting at 7 a.m., and after that meeting, it's a different kind of meeting, but the people will give, who are sponsors and willing to sponsor, they will give their numbers, and they will give you an opportunity to leave your number too, and you will get calls. So do take advantage of that, and it's a wonderful opportunity because they are using the big book. These people are using the big book. Then, there's that other meeting that you mentioned, and that one is the 10 Eastern. And right after that, they do the same thing where they don't have a meeting necessarily, but they do allow people to give their numbers if they are sponsoring, and also for the newcomers. Yeah, so consider yourself a newcomer. And take advantage of that, because sometimes when I've been on that meeting, and if I've wanted to give my number, it's like there are so many people. It's like I got to jump in there to give my number because there's so many that want to help. So, and guess what? You work this program, you're going to be one of those people someday. I guarantee it. Have hope.
Okay. Absolutely. Thanks for that, Nancy. And next question is from Jessica. Hey, Jessica, good morning.
Hey, Larry, good morning. And thank you, Lisa, so much for your presentation. I really enjoyed it. You talked about being dangerously antisocial, and you talked about isolating. And I was wondering if you could share a little more about what you do today when you feel yourself sort of migrating towards that old desire to isolate or to be obsessed with self and not wanting to connect with others.
Well, thank you, Jessica. That was a great question. I appreciate it very much. And, you know, I have to kind of do this like proactively. So I have to make calls, and I have to do that right away in the morning, and I have to answer calls. And there's another funny thing I've heard people say, it's got a pinch. So if somebody calls me and it's sort of like I'm doing something I want to do, I take the call if I can. If I can't, I mean legitimately can't, I call them back. But the whole point is, like, don't wait until it gets that bad. Make sure you're making your calls. and checking in with people, and you know, even just calling to ask somebody how they're doing without talking about yourself. Those are things I do so that I don't go down that rabbit hole of not wanting to talk to people or not wanting to be around people. Thinking that I'm not going to get hurt. That's what it is, right? We think, okay, if I stay away from this one or that one, I'm not going to get hurt. If I stay in my room, you know, that's what, as a kid, kind of I was, was probably safer singing and dancing in my room than being out with my mom because she was sometimes abusive. So I don't know if that's where I got it. Everybody has a different experience, right? But yeah, if you can try to make those calls, get on meetings, do service, do whatever you can, it really actually kind of prevents going that far. I hope that helps.
Thanks so much for the question. And we have time if they're kind of a last call, if there's questions for Lisa this morning.
Yeah, my name is Ted.
Give me your name. Hey, Ted, I got you. Who else?
Cheryl L. Cheryl L. Florida.
Cheryl. That's
Anayeta.
Anayeta. Anybody else? We got Ted, Cheryl, and Hanayeta. Okay. Well, with that, let's go with that. And first up with the question is Ted. Good morning, Ted.
Thank you. Thanks to the speaker. My question is related about resentments. I find myself being kind of overly sensitive, get my feelings hurt easily. But what is the process when you get resentful, when resentment comes up throughout your day? Could you take me the process that helps you to let it go and how do you get rid of it? Like, what's your strategy or whatever it might? Thank you. That's my question.
Yeah. You're so welcome, Ted. Can I ask you where you are in the steps? Ted, well, I'm not sure where you are in the steps, but if you work the steps, there's a magical thing called the 10th step. And
I worked the steps.
Basic.
Yeah, I did work the steps. But sometimes I work the steps. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Have you done it through the vision, through the big book?
I did, yes.
Okay, great. Well, I'm going to look for the page because I want to tell you where it is the 10th step is, because that is what I really feel has saved me so many times. And I was talking about the 10th step training. I don't know if you heard that when somebody asked me about about that, but the 10th step is it's very helpful because basically what it is, it's like doing a mini fourth step for a disturbance. So if you have a resentment or a disturbance, you're going to want to do a 10th step. And they give you the instructions on page 84. And I don't know if you have your big book, but it says, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. So you see, when we have a disturbance, yes, there is something that maybe somebody else did or had a part of, but we can't change them. We can only change ourselves. And so if we do this process, if you read on page 84 what it tells you to do, you're going to get relief. And I find that if I do a 10th step, like as soon as I can, as soon as I recognize that I'm disturbed or resentful or frightened, that helps me immediately. And the one thing we're supposed to do right away is ask God to take our defects away. And I think a lot of times that was something I didn't do. But we're supposed to say, you know, God, remove these defects of character which stand in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows, because, you know, I'm disturbed, I'm having this problem. And then do the process. And you have to call somebody, because or sometimes people write them out and then call them. What I usually do is I either, like I said, if I'm in the car and I can't, I do it on my phone and I send it to my sponsor, or I call somebody and I do it verbally with them and they listen. And so if you have a posse, if you have some people that you can do that with, call them right away and help have a do a 10th step according to the way the Big Book tells you on page 84 and 85. It will help you a lot. I hope that helps, Ed. Yeah, we can't change anybody else, just ourselves. And actually, I can't change myself unless my higher power helps me.
Right. Thanks, Ted. Okay, next up we have Cheryl. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning, Larry. And good morning, Lisa. Thank you so much for your share. I really identified a lot with what you had to say. I was the baby with three jars of baby food, so and I would go into the candy store with money to spend instead of spending it on lunch like I was supposed to. So I related to that right away. My question to you is about again, you use the phrase dangerously antisocial, and I have a hard time sometimes with. I feel like I'm introvert, and so, you know, I make myself go out in the world and I make myself do things to counteract that. How do I determine when I'm at that place of, am I just, you know, I'm an introvert and I'm doing this, or I'm being dangerously antisocial. You know, there were times that I've been out in public and then I come home and I just feel like I need some quiet. I need to be by myself. I need to regroup and rejuvenate. So how do I tell the difference between my natural, you know, characteristic of being an introvert and being dangerously antisocial? Thank you.
Well, you're so welcome. And thank you for the great question, because, you know, I know for myself, as an addict, I didn't understand the concept of self-care. And so, you know, I didn't eat properly. I didn't exercise. I didn't get together socially with people like I should have. And so there is a difference, I believe. And so if you're tired and you come home and you need to make your meal and sit down and have a quiet meal, or, you know, connect with family, or whatever your day looks like at the end. It is important to do self-care, I believe. And I have to do that for myself too. Sometimes I'm just like bent. And you know, like if you've been with people all day and you've been serving people all day in your job, those, you know, it is tiring. And our program demands a lot, quite honestly. I believe our program demands a lot. Like I said, there's, you know, food prep, there's meetings, there's getting together with sponsors and sponsees and doing service and for meetings, whatever it is. It's a lot. However, if we are doing a balance, you know, I mean, we have to have a balance too, because there is that point where I say to myself, look, God, I feel like I can't do one more thing here. I just need a little time. Can you give me a little time before I get the next call, or before I make a call, or before I do this, or before I get on the meeting? I just have to have a little time. Because if I'm feeling disturbed about not enough time or not enough energy, then there's something not quite right, and I need to do a 10th step on that. So I need to talk to somebody about that. The dangerous and antisocial part, I feel like that's gone too far. Dangerous and antisocial was when when I was before this program. I don't have to be that anymore because, like I said, I can make my calls, I can do service, I can get on a meeting, I can even text somebody, just so I'm not alone. I don't know if that helped. I feel like I said there's a balance. You know, we have to find that balance and yet still be of service. And sometimes, honestly, I'm sure many of you have this experience. You get the right call at the right time, boy. And so many people out there, they're doing the same thing or having the same experience as me at the same time. It is amazing. So, yeah, don't miss out on that. That if you get that far, you need to ask for help. That's my experience.
Thank you, Cheryl. Yeah, thanks so much, Cheryl. Thanks, Lisa. Okay, Hanayeta, your turn. Good morning.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you for your service. And Lisa, oh, thank you so much. I'm sitting here looking at your picture as you're talking. So my question, besides my total compliments of your amazing talk, is the last thing you did was the prayer, the St. Francis prayer, which is, you said, on page 99 of the AA 12 and 12. Do you do that on a everyday basis? Do you just do it sometimes? I'm thinking that when you are reading it, I really need to start doing it every day because there's so many things in there that apply to me that I want to do the opposite, not the better way, but the not so good way. And I need to to love rather than to be loved. I think sometimes I'm such a needy person that I feel like I have to be loved all the time. So that's kind of my question and statement.
Thank you so much, Hanayeta, for your beautiful question. And I think of you so often too, especially because you taught me how to put a picture on my phone. So thank you. And I look at your picture too, and I think how lovely it is. So thank you. And I want to tell you that I don't say this prayer every day, but I have to say that I think about it often because I know that there's so many parts in this that come in through my day. And so where can I bring light? Where can I bring joy? Where can I bring comfort instead of wanting to be comforted all the time? I'm needy too. I'm a human being. I'm not perfect. I'm never going to be perfect. I'll never rise above the level of human being, as they say. And so, let me be peaceful. Let me bring love. I think about those things throughout the day, but I do not read this prayer every day. But now, you know what? Because I printed it out so I could have it read in bold, big print, not the little print. I have it sitting right by my chair now, and maybe I'll join you in saying that prayer every day. Maybe we should do that together in the morning, even though we don't do it on the phone. We'll do it in spirit. How's that? Oh, she's being
that
nice and not
great.
Getting back on. Okay, great. That sounds good. I hope we'll talk soon.
Okay, yes. Larry, hit star one.
Okay, I unmuted myself. How about that? Okay, thanks so much, Hanayeta. So before I pack up the proverbial picnic basket here, is we have time. Is there perhaps another question? If not, we can wrap up. But I'll give you that opportunity, star one, if you have a question.
Jeannie B.
Was it Jeannie? Did I get that right?
It is. Yep.
Oh, hi, Jeannie. Okay. Yeah, let's wrap up. Perfect. Let's wrap up with a question from Jeannie B. Good morning.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and thank you so much for your service, everyone, this morning. My question is this. You said you relinquished your last your first special edition talking because of not weighing vegetables. If I heard that correctly, my question is, at what point do you think you're being too hard on yourself? Where is there a place for it's not really a big deal? I didn't binge eat. I didn't eat my abstinent foods. I didn't, you know, where is there a point where it's like just not actually, not literally, not I'm fooling myself, but literally just not a big deal. I'll get back on track. Thank you.
Okay, Jeannie, thank you so much for that question, because that is really not why I've relinquished speaking. It's what happened, but what really was the reason that I relinquished speaking was because I was not in fit spiritual condition. I had let myself get angry. I stewed all day. I ignored a tenth step. I didn't call somebody and say what was going on. I totally blew it off. And that was why I relinquished. Because, yes, I ate off my food plan. And, yes, I got back on the next day, thank God. But I'm going to tell you, I felt a little hungover the next day. And it wasn't from food. It was from anger. And I don't want to ever have a day like that where I go away from the sunlight of the spirit like I did. That was not a good day. And that is why. That, yeah, the food, putting, the food is important. It absolutely is. Because you know what can happen? What could have happened? I could have said, you know what? To heck with it. I am tired of this. I ate vegetables. I ate olive oil. Those are healthy. Those are both healthy things. And you know what? I'm just going to do this my way from now on. And then I could have been in trouble, because my way has never been a very good way. I need to have rules. But it was really about the anger and the stewing and the liking. I liked it that I was the, I, that man wasn't the favorite that day. He had upset my husband. That was the misfortune. That was the problem. And yep, I was far away from the sunlight of the spirit that day, and I don't ever want to do that. So I hope that answers your question.
Thanks so much, Jeannie. And thank you to everyone and that had questions or was just on the line. And a special thank you to Lisa N. from Wisconsin for your presentation this morning. So appreciative, Lisa, of your time. So very gracious of you. So please stick around until we end the recording, at which time I will ask Lisa for her contact information if you care to reach out to her directly. So we will close our meeting this morning from a reading in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous on page 164. And I'll read that. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.